Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. And today we've got returning to the show Preston Dennett. How you going, mate?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. Thank you very much for coming back on the show. It's muchly appreciated.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on. Yeah.
Now, last time we were on the show, we've got about half an hour through. We did do a bit over an hour, but for some reason the audio was lost halfway through it. So I wanted to get you back on anyway, but it would be cool if we could sort of cover what we went into the second half of the show, which to me it was absolutely fascinating getting your take on your investigations and experience. You've done 16 books now. You've been on a lot of TV shows, and you're quite well known, not just in America, but even in Australia and around the world. People who have contacted me, they've been following your work for a while. A lot of people love a lot of the books that you do, especially with the healing side of things with the ET thing. I got a lot of response about how you've done that, which we didn't get into. We did go into that, but it wasn't covered. So there's a well-rounded sort of avenue with what you do, because it's not just alien stuff. It's paranormal, Bigfoot, psychic sort of stuff and levitation and out of body. So there's a lot to cover. Where would you like to start with this? What would you like to start with? Because there's so much to cover. Where would you want to go with this? Or do you just want me to sort of steer it from here?
You're happy to ask me anything you want. But I got involved in this quite a while back and just kind of followed the path that it took me down. My first book was UFO Healings. And really, I was only trying to write an article because I had heard about a couple of cases in the literature. There was a case in France with a doctor who had cut his ankle with an axe. And he was also paralyzed partially from the Algerian War. And he was struck by a beam of light from a UFO one night and woke up the next morning, and his cut on his ankle was gone, and he was no longer paralyzed. He could go back to playing professional piano like he used to, but he had to give it up. Jeez. So that's just one typical case. And now, you know what?
When you came into this, but you were skeptical, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. I was really skeptical, actually. I thought people who were seeing this stuff were crazy or on drugs or lying, seriously. And kind of heard of a report on the news in 1986 and found out that my brother had seen a UFO with his two friends. I ended up interviewing all of them. My sister-in-law saw a UFO over Van Nuys Air Force Base with her two friends. I interviewed all of them. I found out a lot of people that I knew, that I was working with, friends and family, had seen this stuff and weren't even telling me.
Jeez. So, and that happens to be the case even now. With myself, I talk to family or friends, and somebody, if they haven't had a sighting, they've had a paranormal experience or a weird synchronicity type thing. So if everyone sort of sits down for a couple of seconds, I think people will be surprised with how many people they know have actually had something weird, though a lot of people don't want to go into it because the ridicule or
right.
Sort of that they're nuts. Going into the healing type stuff with UFO encounters, what's obviously, some of it has got medical evidence, where they've been to a doctor, then a couple of days later they've had an encounter or an experience and all of a sudden they go back to the doctor and whatever it is fixed. One case that comes to mind is Stan Romanek, whether people believe him or not, but there's been the case where I think his knee was absolutely screwed and he went to the doctor and they went back to get surgery and he's trying to tell the doctor he doesn't need surgery. It was something crucial, some crucial ligament, and his knee, he could walk. So this is where there's lots of documented accounts, even I can think of other cases, but what have you come across that's really stood out in terms of something like that where there's been a bit of evidence saying, all right, this is what was wrong with the person, they've had an encounter and now this has been fixed?
There's so many cases, there's over 100 that I found back, and now there's probably more than 200, I'm going to guess, so you can pick and choose. One case that does stand out to me was a case originally investigated by Bill Hamilton. There's several cases like this involving a lady who had a cyst. They had x-rays and MRIs showing the cyst. She had an encounter shortly before she was due to have surgery in the hospital. Went to the hospital, and this cyst was gone. So there's before and after x-rays showing this. And I've got another case just like that. Same exact scenario. The lady went to the hospital after having an encounter, and they could not find the cyst. Not only that, they found evidence of surgery, and accused her of having had surgery. She, of course, denied it because she didn't want to tell them that who had given her surgery, which was these ETs apparently. But they pointed to these laser scars on her chest and said, "Well, here you've had surgery." They pointed to MRI, saying, "Well, there's fluid that's only present, here if you've had surgery. So we know you've had surgery."
Jeez, that's pretty trippy for evidence wise. And even as a story, when the with cases like this, have the people, the experiences, and I'm an experienced myself, so I know how weird and wonderful and out there it can be, So I can understand how out there some of this is to a lot of the viewers and listeners, but has any of the people that have been taken, have they been communicated with why the beings have done this, taken them and done this type of healing?
For the most part, no. The ETs are pretty tight-lipped. I did analyze looking for patterns, and I did find some. What I found was that people who are having these types of cases are often people who are doing good work for humanity. And this is kind of a loose pattern, but it was there. By that, I mean social workers, lots of cases involving social workers, doctors, inventors, entertainers even, police officers. So it was a loose pattern, but it was there. And, one case involving a couple who was invited aboard a UFO, it was a friendly experience. This was in Arizona. They weren't healed, but they asked the ETs, "Why are you contacting people?" And they said the same exact thing. "We're contacting people on a limited basis, but we can't help too much. You have to solve your own problems. Mm-hmm. And we're just trying to provide assistance." And in that case, the couple was alternative healers who live in Hawaii.
Jeez. So I've heard very similar things when it comes to that part of things. What's some of the other sort of hit? Has there been any cases of broken bones or even cancer or anything like that where they've gone back, they've had an encounter, and people have totally been healed at all, in extreme cases, which may be rare?
There's a number of cases involving healings of cancer. That's probably the most single common one. But of other chronic diseases like diphtheria and tuberculosis, a cancer healing that comes to mind was this lady in Arizona. I believe this was originally investigated by Tim Beckley. Mm-hmm. But at any rate, it was an astonishing case. They thought she was going to die. She was at the end stages of cancer throughout her body, lungs, liver, spleen, so on. And her skin had actually turned orange. She was no longer mobile. When one evening, shortly before she was going to die, doctors felt, she had this powerful urge to drive outside her home into the desert out there and came upon a landed UFO with these short beings dressed in silverish suits who took her on board the craft and gave her what she described as actually a really painful operation involving all kinds of instruments and lights and things like this, a lot of which she did not understand. And she was told to return to her home, drink lots of water, and not take any medicine from the doctors. And she was rushed to the hospital because they thought she was dying, and she steadily improved. And the cancer went away, and the doctors couldn't believe it. So there's a lot of cases like that. Some are more verified than others. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a case involving a gentleman who was hit by a beam of light from this UFO, and he grew a new set of teeth as a result. This was down in Brazil. And he was interviewed by more than 40 doctors, government officials, UFO researchers, city authorities. There was burned grass and dead fish and other physical evidence where this UFO had landed and hovered. So there's a lot of cases.
I've never heard something like that, but that's what I say. Anything is absolutely possible when you're investigating and experiencing these type of things. So, and that was down in Mexico.
No, that was down in Brazil.
Oh, Brazil. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And there's lots of types of stuff going on down that way. We hear about different forms of psychic healing and all these types of things, and a lot of UFO activity plus encounters. They've got some of the best cases, I think, that a lot of people should be looking down in Mexico and Brazil and Peru and Chile and those types of places with a lot of the stuff that's going on down there. Have you done any investigations or many cases outside of the US or research much outside of the US down that way?
No, not really. Certainly, I've talked to people who had encounters down there, and I've been to Mexico, and I was there during those famous solar eclipse down in Baja. But up in Mexico City, at that time, they were seeing all kinds of stuff and videotaping it. It was a huge, huge UFO event, and I certainly heard about that.
So, and the waves are slowly sort of continuing. It's sort of been a steady wave. Each year I'm seeing pretty decent footage of, you know, groups of crafts at one time and mass sightings and sometimes multiple footage from different angles in the same area. So there's lots going on down there.
Yeah, and their government, I think, is a little more forthcoming than the United States in that regard, and Brazil for sure.
Definitely.
Canada as well. And so the United States is lagging a little bit behind in that regard.
Which is unfortunate because there's you guys having the best sort of technology, in my opinion, and having, you know, a firm foot on security around the world and installations. There's a bit more radar data. There's a bit more encounters, I think, and I think there's a bit more footage and witnesses to a lot of events. We've seen that the US has said, I think, since Blue Book around that time that they hadn't investigated it. Cases anymore, but then we see things even with the 1980s event with the FAA with John Callahan and even what happened at Rendlesham Forest has been evidence, and even in Iraq with the event there with the Air Force has been US interest. So the US have been caught out a little bit lying, saying that they don't investigate this anymore, where it's clearly that they do and there's something to this, but they've never said they don't exist, but I think what they have said is that they're not a threat to national security, but I think they're more scared of the interdimensional aspect rather than on top of not just knowing what's flying in the airspace a lot of the time, though I do think there's some little factions that know a little bit of something. Have you come across any sort of government people that have said anything to you on the down low that you can't maybe not be able to go into, but have pointed that they know a little bit more than what they're leading on with?
Oh, absolutely. I would say that happens pretty regularly. People of various levels of government want to tell their story. And I've talked to a number of people in the Navy who told me that they've had some extraordinary encounters involving bright lights while out at sea. One gentleman wanted to speak to me, but only secondhand, because he explained how he had a job that he lied to about everybody in his life. He didn't work in Las Vegas, like he said. In fact, the government flew him up to Alaska to an underground base, which he said they worked on three different areas of research, including seeing through solid objects, sensing devices, biological weapons that made the ones we know of look like child's play, and most importantly to hear is free energy technology, UFOs that run on electromagnetics. And he said that a lot of the objects flying around up there in Alaska near this base were actually their own, you know, the U.S. military. But he got out of working for these guys because he said it was too intense. He had to go under sodium pentothal lie detector tests every weekend, and the security was just too much. So he got out and is now working at a major aerospace firm and is totally under surveillance all the time, he says.
And that would be the case. I know even with my father, he was in the police force for 38 years, and there's still a connection there after many years of retirement. So even with something that minor with the police force, if you can imagine with military or secret sort of stuff, if you're working with the government or one of the alphabet agencies, there's always going to even hear about the president still every day being given a few sheets of paper about updates on certain situations, even after they're out of office.
Right.
So there's always that little bit of a connection. What have you found in common with, has there been any sort of correlating things with people that have been in government that have come to you talking about certain things, like activity in certain areas or any correlating sort of things you've been able to come across, if you can talk about it?
Well, no, not really. I mean, each has their own little piece of the puzzle, showing that our military is neck deep involved in this, no doubt. Mm-hmm. I think we know that for sure. I was recently got an email from a guy whose father worked in the intelligence community, and his father had a friend who just revealed this crazy story where he said he was as a high-level physicist invited aboard a UFO with ETs and government personnel to fly from White Sands to an undisclosed place in Washington, D.C. And he said the ETs were friendly, human-like, but looked different, and that it was a total diplomatic thing that was done regularly. So there's some, that's an indication that we are working with the ETs directly, which I've heard several times. I'm coming from places like Edwards and Area 51. So that's one correlation I've heard coming from multiple sources.
Oh, definitely. And I've got the experience with that as well. And not just personally experiencing that there's a connection, but also with a lot of people in the military, even over here, that have said things under the cuff to myself. So, and it all hooks back to you guys in the US as well, funny enough, with these, you know, we're all interconnected in some way, but the US seem to be the overseas and the one paving the way, you know, with the allies, whether it's UK or New Zealand or Australia, or whoever it may be, even Canada, I believe there's a lot going on there. And you've got the, you know, installations in Alaska and, you know, Area 51, even Pine Gap here, which are the areas to be testing a lot of these types of things or using them due to low population in the area. So that just makes sense where a lot of these installations are and why the activity is reported in these spots. But Area 51, I don't know if you've investigated much or even been out that way, but apparently the activity's died down a lot after Lazar and Leah coming out in the early 90s. Is that correct?
Well, yes and no. It's certainly, you still can't go on there and just walking through the base. It's still under guard. You'll get chased off. There are still people reporting UFOs. Its popularity, I think, has dipped a bit, but it's still an active base.
And you've got the Utah Dugway Proving Ground, is that what it's called, where there's a lot more activity now as well, apparently, with other types of technologies, apparently.
Yeah, there's a number of places you can go to across the United States and for the world, that matter, where it appears we are either working with the ETs or definitely, you know, flying their craft on a limited basis. And I've been told by military personnel that maybe 20% of the stuff people are seeing is military. But that's not to say it all is, because I have to tell you, there are 1,000 cases of people being chased down the highways at night by these objects, these UFOs, which kind of harass them, as you know, beaming them, pacing their car, going around their car. A lot of cases like that, and that's definitely not the military doing that.
Look, I 100% agree, and I had this conversation with someone the other day. I was saying that they don't think, you know, I don't think they're what they think they are in terms of the interdimensional aspect, and they're not. They're sure as hell not flying at the speed of light from Zeta Reticuli to here, which would take a hell of a lot of time because there's some interdimensional aspect with the technology, but there is a percentage of definitely military vehicles, ARVs or whatever people want to call them, that are here that we're using, but I don't think it's a large majority. At the same time, I was pointing out to this person is you just wouldn't willy-nilly test this advanced technology in front of the public.
Right.
Especially if you screwed up, you wouldn't want to crash it, and if you did crash it, you wouldn't want it in an area where people would be hurt or there's a chance of another country coming in, taking the vehicle, like I've heard America doing with Mexico, or even Russia and America trying to get to a certain places in Europe and whatnot before the other gets there to back engineer or to get their hands on the technology. So there's definitely that component to it. With having you on the show, there's a lot of people that bought they were calling you the USO man, and I've seen you on a few things about the USOs, and they absolutely love you. They're like, oh, it's so cool that you've got this, got Preston on the show. Have you found some connection with even USO activity? For example, just for those watching and listening, USOs is underwater space, right? Unidentified.
What is submersible?
Submerged, yeah, object. What's the main term used for that? Oh, because there's a few different USO. What do you call them?
Unidentified submersible objects or submerged objects.
Yep. So they're basically a UFO. Now, it's theorized by a lot of people with the anti-grav field around the craft. They're basically immune to anything outside that field. So they can go in the water, in the air, anywhere. It just doesn't matter, and it's not going to react with the speed or anything in the craft. So that's what's theorised, and I've seen some crafts actually going in and out of the water myself here in Australia, so it's quite amazing something to see. lots of reports in the US. Has there been military installations on the coastline where there's been lots of activity? Is there any correlation there, sort of thing, that you've seen?
Well, it's hard to say. Certainly, to an extent, yes. With Gulf Breeze, that's a very military area, and they had an enormous amount of activity right off the coast there. And as far as off the coast here of California, where there's all kinds of UFOs coming in and out of the water, there is Point Mugu Naval Base right at the north end of where all this is going down. So they know for sure what is happening here. I don't think they're causing it. I think that they're very interested in what's going on, though.
What's some of the cases, even what not to do with the military, just at the, you know, average Joe in the public scene, has there been any sort of, definitely each case has got its own stance and its, you know, own weird and wonderful thing, but is there a couple you could rattle off that have been very interesting to investigate yourself in your area or abroad?
There's a number of cases. It's so hard to pick because I have so many favorites. One case occurred in Texas involving this gentleman who was on a boat with his girlfriend, his best friend, and his best friend's girlfriend. They were teenagers at the time and were going to go out at night and just mess around on this small lake in Texas. Not a place you would think a UFO could hide. I mean, it wasn't a tiny lake, but, you know, not a huge lake. And they're just driving along this lake, pulled into a little cove there, and we're about to start kissing. You know, two are in the front seat, two are in the back, right? They're going to just, you know, have a good time that night. And suddenly this object comes floating up right next to their boat. And it was very large, 20, 30 feet in diameter, jet black, and was making kind of a low humming noise and was really scaring, you know, the ladies there. So they tried to get away and could not get away. It was holding their boat somehow in place. And this is when they really started to panic because they were revving up this boat, which was a pretty powerful speedboat, up to full speed, and it was not moving. And suddenly there was this weird shift. They lost time. They don't know exactly what happened. But there was missing time. And they woke up. It was about an hour later or so. And they were in a different part of the lake. The boat was moving at full speed. The UFO was gone. They were just able to stop the boat in time before crashing. Quickly returned to the harbor where they found their parents, furious, because they were out, you know, hours later than they should have been. So he wants to go under hypnosis, but, you know, he's a little bit scared to find out what happened there.
That's a case of
an underwater abduction, which, you know, I've got a couple like that, where people were taken from the, you know, abducted aboard a USO.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What have they reported when this has happened? Like, what's the circumstances and what have they seen and where have they gone? Can you go into any of that?
There's, you know, normally when someone's taken into a UFO, you can kind of predict what they're going to see. You know, the rounded walls laid out on a table. There's a certain amount of data that I've heard many, many times. But there's a few cases that have occurred in this area which kind of surprised me. One case involves this abduction which took place right on Catalina Island. I'm right there in the harbor involving, again, two teenagers. They had missing time and years later under hypnosis, one of the gentlemen who is now, you know, a doctor and a pilot, you know, a pretty credible witness, recalled under hypnosis being taken with his friend to an underground area, not a craft or anything like this. This he felt was underground. It had rock walls. It was very large, a very large chamber. It was kind of dark. There was some computer equipment, but it didn't look super complicated, which again is something I've heard many times, almost primitive looking equipment. And he said the ETs he saw were not the typical grays that many people describe, but more a bug-like, grasshopper, praying mantis type of ET, which I've heard before. He said it was wearing a cloak, long, white, kind of loose. And he said he wasn't scared at all. He wasn't the target of the abduction. Apparently his friend was, who was taken to another room, and we don't know what happened to him. But this guy was just sat there on a bench for, you know, 40 minutes or so and was returned to their boat in Avalon Harbor.
That's amazing. When you were saying that, I think in the same area, I'd seen on something, I don't know if it was UFO Hunters or what it was, where there was a plane going to the water around that area where you're speaking of, and right. somehow the dude got out of the airplane and they found him, and what they spun out off was that the seatbelt, he was unconscious, but the seatbelt had somehow, it may have been undone or not, I'm not sure, and the dude's alive today, but he shouldn't be under all circumstances, like under all the evidence. He shouldn't be with us, and it's basically the conclusion that he was taken when this happened, and I think it had something to do with the UFO was responsible for it crashing into the water in that area.
Yeah, I know of that case. The UFO was hovering right. This is the same area.
Yeah.
And this it was a USO. It was hovering on the surface of the sea, struck the plane with a beam of light, abducted him. The plane crashed and killed the other guy.
Yeah.
Yep. And so it's a remarkable case.
Yeah, I can't remember what. Blame me if I can't. You know, I can't remember what the hell that was on at the moment, because it that is an interesting case, isn't it?
Yeah, that was on deep sea UFOs. I was on that episode actually.
All right, they had the some type of radar system that could penetrate the water deep down, because you guys were looking for the aeroplane to see where, and they went by some model where obviously the plane had shifted over some time because it was still down there. I don't think it was found, but you can expect that after all the storms and the way the water drifts and everything after so many years. So, but, you know, everyone went all out in terms of looking for that. I found that episode very interesting.
Yeah, it scored very high on the ratings, they told me, and they called me back to do another show. Yeah, it was a fun show, and I was really hoping we could find it, because you don't often get money thrown at the UFO phenomena to try and do some real research. And it would have been great if we had actually found the plane. But we did have divers. We went down there looking for it. So it was pretty interesting.
That's amazing. With some of the shows and everything that you've done, I've been surprised with how well that you've been taken and the others have been taken into like the show, rather than like what I'm trying to say is how good they've dealt with you guys, rather than trying to backlash and make it all seem crazy. It seems that more and more TV shows are actually looking at this more seriously now. You've got to have the entertainment factor, but it hasn't been such a bad job. There has been some shows, I think it was called Chasing UFOs, where even James Fox and others on the show had a go with what was being taken out of the show and how it was produced and put together. But then there's been things like Deep Sea UFOs, UFO Hunters, and a few other shows where things have actually been looked at with a bit of a balance, also with the entertainment factor. Have you noticed this yourself when looking at the shows that you've done and being part of the team when doing these?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, early on, you know, they always would bring on a debunker. And, you know, tell me this, what other field of science is there, or research, where they bring on someone who starts bashing you the instant you start laying out your thing? I mean, this is ridiculous. It's not balanced at all. They bring on the scientist and they bring on someone to try and debunk you.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So that has definitely slowed down a little bit. I don't think we're completely all the way there.
That's just one of the things. Don't mind me at the moment. I'm playing with cameras because all my audio devices have just gone bloody haywire in here, which happened last time when I was talking to you. One thing I wanted to go in from here at the moment is some of the stuff you've done with your writing on out-of-body traveling. Would you mind just giving an overview of what that is and we can sort of take it from there in this episode? Because when I had you on last time, everything cut out when we sort of went into this. I love this. I've had experiences like this. A lot of the viewers and listeners to the show have had their own experiences in this, and I think everyone has, though they sort of say it's a dream type thing. Would you mind going into a bit of the out-of-body experience?
Yeah, I have to tell you, that's now my favorite subject, even over UFOs, because it really relates to you as a person. And I became interested in that following the death of my mother in 1984. And became interested in dreams and lucid dreams and out-of-body experiences, picking up Robert Monroe's book, Out-of-Body Journeys. He laid out some exercises on how to do it, and I tried them. It took me about 2 or 3 months, but I started to have a lot of experiences. I was very inspired, so I actually became really good at it. And an out-of-body experience is basically, we have a dream body, or astral body. The truth is we have seven bodies, perhaps, or even more. But just to simplify things, we'll call it the physical body and the astral body. And in the astral body, you can do all these amazing things. You can walk through walls. You can fly. You can visit distant locations. You can go to the quote, other side, where people go when they die. See your spirit guides, deceased loved ones, visit the Akashic Library. You can do all kinds of crazy things. The astral body is the superior body, I think, and we're really kind of projecting down to the physical world with our physical body. So this is something we can all do, and I think we all do this every night. We just don't remember.
Exactly, and that's my opinion on it. One thing I haven't heard before, and look, where the viewers and listeners here, I'm absolutely blown away with the types of questions I get. They're very thoughtful, they're intelligent. So what I wouldn't mind just asking you quickly, if you can just, even just in a layman's way, just skim over it quickly, what's the different seven types of bodies that you were just speaking of, if that's okay?
This is according to Eastern religion mostly, but it seemed to be verified by the people who, you know, the modern day explorers. Mm-hmm. There's our physical body, which is, you know, obviously our flesh and blood, the etheric body, which is kind of our aura. Then there's the astral body, which is our dream body, or our desire body, it's often called, because this is where we have a lot of our emotions, fear and excitement and lust and things like this. Above that, there's, now this is where I get a little shady, I'm not fully educated on this, but there's the causal body, the Buddhic body, the Akashic body, and it goes up from there to like the Atmic, or I forget what it's called, but each succeeding body has greater and greater abilities, kind of transcends time and space to that much of a greater degree, and can do all these amazing things.
That's a great, just sort of quick overview. That's exactly what I wanted. Now, one of your books is Out of Body Exploring, and there's sort of like a, I think maybe even a how-to sort of guide in there. What's the technique that you've used, or that's commonly used for people to practice to leave the body, whether it's deep breathing and then concentration on a certain thing? Is there sort of a method that that a lot of people are using these days to practice this and actually do?
Oh yeah, and it's easy, and there's a lot of literature on this, and it's easy to find, and used to be only taught in secret mystical schools, honestly, so this is a real opportunity for people in this modern day and age to do this stuff, and most of the books are very similar in their recommendations. I've got it down to three simple steps, which match, you know, what most other people are doing. First, you physically relax, and that involves relaxing all your muscle groups as you're going to bed or maybe waking up in the morning, just getting as fully physically relaxed as you possibly can. And this is a very important step. A lot of people kind of skip this. You know, people sleep with their teeth grinding and their fists clenched and never fully relax in their entire lives. So relaxation is key, and this is where a lot of people kind of fail. So it takes 20, 30 minutes possibly to get that relaxed.
Uh-huh.
The second step would be relaxing the mind. And we have this stream of consciousness, which is constantly going in our head. And it's there all day. And as we go to sleep at night, it turns into images and sounds and dreams. And we fall into it, thinking we're still awake. So there's another key point, is relaxing this stream of consciousness. All the songs we heard, all the people that yelled at us, the traffic, the movies we looked at, everything, all of that. It's all there in multiple layers. You kind of got to let it pass and slow it down and distance yourself from it. And you want to get to the point where you start to see images and you start to are so relaxed, you start to feel lightness or heaviness or numbness or tingling, or especially a vibration, which is called the vibratory state. And when you feel that, you're ready.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the third and final step is visualizations and affirmations. And there's a ton of these. But by affirmations, I mean you just tell yourself, now I am out of body. Or I will go out of body. Or tonight I will remember everything that happens to me. It's all about memory. It really is. And visualizations, and this is what really works. This is what will take you right out of your body, is visualizing yourself running down a pathway. Visualize yourself spinning in place. Visualize yourself standing on an elevator, pressing the button and going upwards. Visualize yourself on a swing set, anything that gives movement, the bow of a boat going up and down. There are other ways. You can visualize a deceased loved one very, very strongly, and that's what I call a love bridge, and that will take you right to the other side and bypass all the unpleasant exit sensations and things like this. Or you can visualize a place. That's a little harder. It would have to be a place you know very well, and that can take you out of body. There's all kinds of, you know, little tricks like that that you can do. But here's the real trick, and this is the single key. Throughout your waking day, you have to do this one thing called critical thinking and reality testing. Because what happens is we're dreaming all night, and it's so realistic, we don't even question the fact that we're dreaming and out of body. But if throughout the day, if you ask yourself, is this a dream? Could I be out of body right now? And do a little reality testing. You will do this at night, and you will discover that, in fact, that you are out of body one-third of your life, and you're missing it. And by reality testing, I mean take a little hop off the ground. You might be surprised to find yourself suddenly flying. Or try to stick your finger through a solid object, a wall or your desk. Because when you're out in the astral, you can move through solid objects. And it'll be so surprising, it'll be mind-blowing when you're sitting at your desk at work one day, you're like, all right, this is ridiculous, I'm going to try and stick my finger through my desk, and it's going to go right through. And you're going to have a lucidity, revelation, enlightenment that's going to blow your mind, because you'll realize you're out of body, and you can fly, and you can do all this crazy stuff, and you thought you were awake.
That's something I haven't heard before in terms of sort of a reality check during the day to see if you're dreaming or which realm you're in, basically. Are you in 3D world or you in astral form? And that's actually good. You know, that totally resonates with me, what you're saying. Like, I've had a lot of these experiences. I connect with my guides, I bring other people's guides in. I know what the feeling is and the sensation when you go through walls. You can feel that the makeup of the entire structure of that wall on an atomic level, and your energy, its energy, but there's sort of like a slowed downness slightly for a second, but you're going through the darn thing, and it's really weird when you start doing it. And, you know, other times I'm a ball, like a whitish orb, and I'm just somewhere, and all of a sudden I want to go somewhere else, and I'm somewhere else. I don't know where it is on when I think with this body brain when I look back, but I know at the time I know where it is. I know that I'm there for a reason. And then there's other beings, like there's a lot of the times when I left body or did remote viewing, I would have this blue being with me that sort of looked like an avatar, or almost like an actual avatar type being, but it was a bit more humanized in terms of size and shape and structure, and parts were very similar to a human. So I've had a lot of experience like this, and I give both. It's just like experiences, whether people are having a physical experience with a UFO encounter or an astral experience. I give both as much validity as each other experiencing both, because both are a reality. It just depends on what vibration you're coming from. In saying that, what you've just said is a great tip in terms of people thinking and trying to at least once a day do that. See if your finger's going to go through the table. You know, little things like that. How long have you been? Obviously, everyone watching this has even been having experiences, whether they realise it or not, on this level. How long have you really been looking into this subject of outer body experiences?
Since I would say I was a pretty young man, you know, around, you know, my early 20s, back in 1988, 89, 90, that's when it started for me. And I got really good at it for a couple of years there, and then it fades off a little bit, and then you start having a whole bunch again. So it goes in and out a bit. And certainly I've read all the books on the subject. I'm very interested in the subject, and have recently been having a whole bunch of really amazing astral experiences of all kinds. God, one, just recently I popped out of my body. And, you know, you always want to have a plan when you're out of body, because you don't have a lot of time for one thing, and it's very responsive to thoughts. And if you're thinking of all these different things, you're going to be distracted very easily. So I wanted to visit Area 51 And that's what I did. I called out to visit Area 51, and I was able to fly there in an instant, kind of snap your fingers and you're there, and landed right down there on the lake bed. I was breathless with excitement, I have to tell you. Looking at the hangars there, I saw some people dressed in kind of military clothes off there in the distance walking by the side of the building, and got a little frightened because I thought about the ETs that I think are probably there, and that drew me right back to my body. But this is something anyone can do, and it doesn't take a whole lot of effort. It's like learning a computer program or maybe a musical instrument, that kind of learning curve. You know, anyone can do it.
Definitely. And I find it beneficial in so many different ways in dealing with just reality in terms of how you see all as an illusion, but it depends which illusion you want to pick up on. I guess basically what program do you want once you can realize this? Everything's real, but it depends what you want to be real and where do you want to be. So in terms of the out-of-body experience, I think it's very important to look at that along with near-death experiences and other things, because you get this cross-correlation with the paranormal, ETs, interdimensional beings, guides, whatever people want to call it, which a lot of researchers in time go back to. Being a researcher yourself, I'd love to ask you this question, and the question is, have you yourself noticed when you're having a lot of time researching, looking into cases, and you're sort of being absorbed by it, do you have experiences, and then when things die down and you sort of get back into 3D life, does things die down in terms of even cases being brought to you? It's like, for example, I will be writing a book or doing something, and all of a sudden everything will fall into my lap on a certain subject without even me trying. So whether it's even something like that or on a paranormal level, I guess what I'm trying to say, the more you look into a subject, does your life seem to have weird stuff happening? And then when you're sort of not worrying too much about this sort of stuff, it dies down. It's sort of like as if the interest sparks the activity.
Absolutely. And it's funny you mentioned that kind of things fall into your lap phenomena. I can't tell you how many people have walked up to me out of the blue and told me their UFO encounter. And I'm not wearing anything that says UFO on me. These people don't know me. You know, I don't know how some of this stuff happens. It's oddly guided to an extent that shocks me at times. And I have to tell you, when I don't do my writing on UFOs, they'll show up. I'll have a little sighting. Or when I'm doing a bunch of it. Just a couple days ago, I had my first UFO sighting in, gosh, 3-4 years. And it was while driving home on the freeway. I'm looking at what I thought was Venus. This was on, you know, January 27th. Blue sky, you know, just after sunset. And I'm thinking, well, Venus looks really bright today, twice as big as normal, is what I'm thinking, that I can almost see the disk, the shape there. And as I'm watching it, I'm like, God, it looks so bright. It slowly fades, and disappears, and it's gone. And I look, and there's Venus off to the left, you know, which I hadn't seen because I was looking at this thing. And I don't know what it was. It wasn't a plane, obviously. You know, I've seen this kind of phenomenon. I know this area well. I have to say this, you know. It wasn't a helicopter. It wasn't a satellite. It wasn't a shooting star, you know, or a weather balloon. But you kind of actually feel something from it.
You do. You know, what I call thought transfer. It was funny because I was producing my doco, and it took about 3 days to do. And the first day I started and the last day I started, in the evening, both my partner and I filmed with two cameras in HD over the house, stopping and turning. And it's up now. People can go and check that for themselves on YouTube and my website, which I include in the end of the documentary. And it was just like there is that thought component where it's almost like a hello moment, and that's it.
Exactly.
It's weird how, and this is, it's happening to so many researchers as well, that they don't talk about this because they're like, I don't want to become part of the story. I'd rather tell others people's stories. But talking to a lot of researchers like yourself and others, there is this component to this reality. And that's why I asked you, because the amount of researchers I have spoken to all around the world, I've asked them, when you're getting into this and you're obsessed by it, or you basically are, you have all this stuff drawn to you, and then when you die down, the activity dies down, but still there's that component where everything falls onto your lap.
Right. There's a name for this, actually. It's called UFO Investigator's Disease. I wrote an article about
it. Yeah, all right. Yeah.
All the major researchers, well, not all. I don't want to say all, but a lot are definitely having experiences, either inspired to become UFO researchers by early experiences in their life, which is true for Bud Hopkins, actually. He saw a UFO before he started researching this stuff. Or, you know, it's attracted to them. There's a lady who did a follow-up book on UFO healings. She said the ETs came right into her bedroom as she was writing this book, Celestial Healings. So they're for sure keeping tabs on us. There was one case where I asked this lady to go on TV, and she said, sure. The ETs came the next day and said, we don't want you to go on TV. And so she didn't. So they're keeping tabs on all us UFO researchers for sure.
Definitely. I agree with that 100%. And what I've experienced, you know, that I don't, you know, people want some form of confirmation on that. When you're living it, you don't need to, and that's what you'd know too. You just know this as well as talking to the amount of people you have, that you just know that to be true in terms of being, you know, having the tabs kept on you. In saying that, I did ask you in the last show, which unfortunately got cut out, about any government involvement or sort of monitoring on yourself. Can you go into that at all?
Yeah, you know, I haven't had a lot of that, but I've had some, I think. Certainly when I do lectures, I've had some guys heckle me and try to debunk me who looked like government guys, and the audience pretty much took care of them, and they weren't hard to handle. And they come up to your table and try to debunk you there. But probably the more interesting one, once I was driving along and someone took my photograph, stopped the car, and took a picture of me. And I thought that was odd because it was in such a random location. But weird things like that, I've had a lot of phone problems. I will say that. A lot of email problems. A lot. And sometimes I'll be doing an interview and the static and clicking starts, and I'm like, all right, because I don't know if I'm being tapped, right? But it gets so bad, the interviewee will say, do you want me to call back? There's a lot of clicking going on. And I'm like, no, cause I want to get the interview, honestly. Let the government listen. I did have this as well. This guy called me. This is when I was just a new UFO researcher. This government guy called me, starts listing his credentials, how he's working in the top secret government as a doing confidential mapping and satellite stuff and all this stuff, and he's a colonel, and what I'm doing with this UFO research is dangerous, and I'm barking up the wrong tree, and I should get out of this, and I'm not going to get any pay dirt, and there's nothing in it, and I'm just going to cause trouble and have problems. And honestly, I was kind of flattered that he would call me, that he thought my research was even worth, you know, threatening me. Because at that point I was doing the research into this UFO wave over Topanga Canyon, which did have evidence of government involvement, including helicopters hovering over, you know, these objects, searching for them. I found one witness who claims that she wouldn't talk to me, and she was really upset when I found out about her case. But she was being surveyed by the government under surveillance because she was having constant encounters in her home. And they ended up forcing her to testify about all these different races of ETs that she had seen and all her experiences in this weird military court, she said. So I don't know. The government does know about this.
They definitely do. I've got footage of both photo and video of, and these aren't normal helicopters. I spoke to one bloke who said, I won't say it too much, but they're right up in the Australian Air Force. And the photo of one of the helicopters I've got was a grey, gunmetal, stealth grey helicopter that to me looks like it's made out of friggin' one piece of metal, for starters, which is, I haven't seen anything like that in the public domain. And apparently we weren't meant to have them at the time I took this photo, and it's clear as day I've got this over the next door neighbours flying away from me, so for starters, we do have them. But what's true, and I've had the black, you know, the, I don't know what type of helicopters, but they're military, they're fat, they're chunky, multiple witnesses to these events around me, but there's some component, because what I did pick up on is sometimes I'll have a UFO sighting at the time, or just before, or just after these helicopters rock up, Now, a lot of people will go, how could this happen? Well, I know for a fact that what I'm seeing, not all the time, sometimes there is military involvement, but what I'm seeing a lot of the time is interdimensional. It's not military. And people go, well, how would the military know when or where to rock up? And my answer to that is they've got some type of monitoring system, because what people forget is that even though it's low level, the government at some level have alien technology, whether people want to believe that or not. And that whatever they've got makes me think that that's how they know when to rock up at certain places or times. You know, I've even thought about sometimes they could even be time traveling back to a certain event where you've got government involvement to try and cover up the event, as far out as that sounds to a lot of people. But there is government involvement at some way. With that case you were just talking about before, besides the helicopters and what you're saying leading to the military involvement in that area, what else came up in terms of military involvement with that case, with the book you're writing about? The Canyon one, I think you were saying it is.
Well, there was a case where there was a UFO being chased by military helicopters. That indicated that they were aware of it. These helicopters would show up on the nights these saucers were showing up. They would show up for like 3 nights in a row, you know, a couple times a month, and that's when the helicopters would come and chase them away. And I got much more calls from people complaining about the helicopters than from the UFOs, which were much more elusive.
Do you have any sort of synopsis or conclusions or anything, even an idea of why that would be with that specific area and with the helicopters and the UFOs?
You know, I don't. What I think is there's a base there, whether it's under the water there or underground. It's hard to say, but I'm sure the government is aware of it. And it's, I think, a large one, because there are a couple of cases in this area involving a couple of hundred objects seen at once. So there's at least a parking lot down there for sure of all these objects. And they are able to hide there and have access to a very large population base, meaning Los Angeles, while still remaining undetected, which is very similar to the Hudson Valley UFO hotspot. Mm-hmm. So this is a pattern I've noticed in other, you know, UFO wave or flap areas. So I think that's what it is. I think they have a base.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever come across somebody like Bob Bigelow in your investigations, or has he been brought up at all?
Well, I've certainly been interviewed about him. I think I went on the Jesse Ventura show once, and they were very interested in Bob Bigelow and all his research. So I did a little research on him. I haven't had any personal experiences as far as that, but he does appear to be very interested in UFOs, and I'm sure that there's a lot of, you know, the whole UFO cover-up is only quasi-military. It's also being run by corporations and the super rich.
Well, I think that's
kind of one percenter.
It's definitely important to bring up, because I even know here of, I'm not going to say much more, but I know that Bigelow's involved with trying to, I know some stuff has gone missing here in Australia that's gone to him. I know that he's offered money, and there's a special top UFO investigator that everyone praises that's involved with him, and stuff goes missing. So this person will know who I'm talking about, but I just keep on finding his name popping up and things go missing as well. And then there's funding going on, which shows where's the loyalty. Is it to the investigation, to the case, for the people, or is it to go into somebody's little black box where every friggin' good idea or evidence goes that we don't get to see in the public?
Well, as far as the history of the United States, there has not been a single UFO citizens group that hasn't been kind of infiltrated by the military. And these guys, from APRO, you know, to QFOs, to all of them, MUFON certainly has had its troubles. So I don't know. It's a difficult situation. The military is very interested in this. There's a lot of people very interested in this subject, and there is still an active cover-up, as evidenced by what happened during the Stevensville lights in Texas recently, a couple of years ago.
And that was a very good case.
Right. The military lied about it. You know, they denied it. They said they were there. It was their engines. They threatened a witness. They made contradictory statements. And this is typical of how they have bungled the UFO situation from the very beginning. Mainly this is the lower downers, I think, in the ranking system, whereas the people on the very high levels are in tight control and are controlling what is essentially this slow trend towards disclosure. But I think they're not going to do it too quickly, but it's inevitable.
Well, from what I, like, looking into it, and I haven't been around, like, I'm 31, I'm still young in all this, and I'm an experiencer, so sometimes I think, well, not sometimes, a lot of the time when you're in the thick of it, unless you've sort of got people outside of you looking in on your situation and others, you don't pick up everything, you know. I don't pick up everything. But with the trends and stuff that you've noticed over the years that you've been involved with this and researching, would it be fair to say that things have sort of gone from, look, there's always been, we could say, the military corporate industrial complex scenario where you've got the corporations and the military, but it seems back in the day the military were more in charge, though not under the president, but just that there was a military component to the cover-up. To me, there's that, but now these days it's gone more to the corporations. Like if we look at NASA and everything, now it's going outsourced to other aerospace companies rather than NASA. You know, and NASA was originally created to be ran by the people and overseen by the people. And what JFK and a lot of people were trying to do with NASA just didn't work out because of other people's interests. And you got Johnson that came in later on, President Johnson. But would it be fair to say that everything's sort of gone from a military oversight to now there's some black corporation sort of network where not just technologies are being created, but also the cover-up sort of being veered by. And what I mean by this in a way is if we look at, for example, Bob Bigelow, now we've got the Skinwalker Ranch connection, but then we've also got the connection of he got MUFON, gave him 700 and something G for a year, and then took all their files. And now, at the same time, the FAA manual goes from MUFON to now you report to Bigelow Aerospace. Do you sort of see where I'm going with this? It goes from everyone thinking the military is covering up to now it's gone to a corporation level more so than what it was back in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, it's a slippery, changing situation that is very difficult to pin down. There is a constitutional crisis going on, I think. This technology is being withheld from the public. It's being leaked out and controlled by people who have no right to control it. And we don't know exactly who they are. Once we think it's them, you know, there's no doubt the upper levels of the military are involved. The colonels, the generals, the Navy in particular knows all about this. The Army and the Air Force, they all know quite a bit. It's, I think, the biggest subject they got going on.
There's some overlap, isn't it, between military and the corporations?
Yeah, there's no doubt it's the world itself is not run by the military. It's not, the president is not the one who has control over this situation, not even close. We don't know who it is, but it's apparently a small group of people. MJ-12, this group has apparently expanded and been renamed, you know, several times. I've heard all kinds of different acronyms and terms for them, but they're the ones who are running this. And they're upper-level scientists, really rich guys, leaders in various parts of, you know, business and things like this. So I don't know. I think they're losing control. I think there's probably infighting within that group. And this thing is being pushed mainstream, largely, you know, by the force of the whole ET presence itself, and by the public. We're at a time now where the evidence, it's an open conspiracy. It's not going to go backwards. The ETs are not going to go away. There's going to be more Phoenix lights, more Mexico City sightings, more Topanga Canyon waves. So it's going to explode. It's going to just reach a point of, you know, the 100th monkey effect.
Definitely. And even if we look at Australia with the population we've got here, which is only 24 million on a landmass the size of America. So if you imagine America with 24 million, that's basically what Australia is like. We've got a hell of a lot of sightings going on. So a lot of the time people would go, oh, you know, you wouldn't notice as much in Australia because of a smaller population. But these days, there's that many people in every state, in, you know, locations spread out across the landmass here that are having sightings. So, and we look at America, there is more stuff more than ever now in terms of good footage. There's a lot of fake footage out there, but there's lots of the stand-up cases, even with the O'Hare incident. They tried to debunk that, and they first put up fake photos of the O'Hare incident, and then the real ones were later to be found. And that was a major case that, you know, broad daylight, basically transparent, leaves a hole in the clouds, and then you've got Phoenix Lights, the Stevensville case. There's lots going on, and it seems to be a continuous thing. Even here on the East Coast in Australia, we've got many sightings. That's mainly the hot spot here in Australia, the East Coast, but I'm in here in Melbourne now, and we've got a lot going on here. So I think you're right in terms of saying that there's a lot more going on, and the ETs aren't going anywhere.
Right, and only a fraction of what we're seeing reaches the mainstream media. Certainly we get one or two cases which are so powerful that they just can't be denied, but this is going on nightly. I'm telling you that it's much more active than people realize. MUFON and the National UFO Reporting Center receive dozens of cases every day from California alone. So we're talking, you know, thousands of sightings daily. It's what, you know, that's my new assessment. I think these guys are coming up and down, you know, like flies. This is very active, and it's a situation that's largely hidden. And the fact is, these ETs could do this completely invisibly if they wanted. But now they're putting on what appears to be a publicity campaign. They are showing themselves, posing for photographs, trying to desensitize people. We have ETs pervasive in pretty much all aspects of culture, from candy to advertising to arcade games. It's everywhere. It's something that young people have grown up with. So I think we're definitely going to see open disclosure. They're going to land, and it's going to be amazing.
And that's what people forget is that, yes, there's the government and corporation component to the cover-up, but also those who are for doing that are on the positive side of the fence, that are ETs, they're also part of the cover-up too. And when they reveal themselves, I think it's on a way that's going to be for our benefit as a collective, in a way where we've been eased into it. And a lot of what you just mentioned has been the easing us into it. So that's what people need to remember is also, they go, why don't they just land? Well, they're also part of the cover-up, but they're part of the cover-up for a different reason. They're orchestrating it the way they do, I think, for our benefit, not to shock us so much. Well, do you understand what I'm saying by that?
Yeah, if they landed, you know, and just showed themselves, it might not be good news for us necessarily. Say the military got hold of healing technology. How do you think they're going to use it? They're going to patch up their soldiers and send them out again. And if we got, you know, ways to increase lifespan, we'd have an overpopulation problem that's magnified beyond what it already is. Right? So they're a little bit smarter than that. They're trying to educate us. And once we get to the point where we don't shoot at them every time that they appear, you know, and we aren't so warlike amongst each other, I think we're going to see a lot more of them moving more openly among us. They are among us already. Frankly, they're mingling in our population. There's ETs that look very human, utterly human, and are all over in our culture, and people don't even know it.
And they've been here for thousands of years as well.
Right. So there's a secret portion of society that's actually ETs, which is kind of interesting to think about. They're not all just grays. They're not all praying mantis or things like this. There's the Nordic type, and they're no doubt working hard on a limited basis to help wake us up.
Definitely. I'll agree on that. Now, I'll wrap up the show here. Is there anything you would like to leave the viewers and listeners with? Anything you're working on at the moment? Also underneath this, there's going to be the link to your website, which I've got here. It's prestondennett.weebly.com. So there's that as well, but there'll be a link directly underneath the video. Anything you're working on at the moment or that you'd like to bring up?
Yeah, I just had my book, UFOs Over Nevada, released a couple of weeks ago. I'm super excited about that.
Awesome.
Working on another book, UFOs Over Arizona, and another about very close encounters, is what I'm calling it, tentatively, where people have been, you know, been taken on board. I think that's going to change the way a lot of people think about UFOs. It's not really just your standard abduction and medical examination. It's a much more comprehensive thing that ETs are doing when they contact people.
Awesome.
So I would really excited about what's going on, and thanks a lot for having me on the show.
No worries. I've got an awesome response from having you on last time. So many people have praised you for how great your books are. It blew me away with the amount of, like, it's up there in the top three people where I've had that many messages about you. So, with guests. So a lot of people are looking at what you're doing. It'd be good to get you back in the next month or so and go into some of the later work that you're doing now in terms with the book you've just released and even some of the paranormal ghost aspect, which the show cut out on last time. But we'll leave it there at the moment. And again, Preston, thank you very much, mate, and we will chat soon.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks again.
Thank you.